VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk. Just before we introduce our guest, a reminder to listeners in New Hampshire, it's Election Day, and we encourage you to be informed on the issues, then go to the polls and cast a prayerful vote. Critical day in New Hampshire as, the eyes of the nation watching what's going on there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Second Amendment is under attack. As a point of reference, the Second Amendment says this: a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And perhaps the latest barrage of assaults has come from the state of Virginia, but it's not Virginia alone that is underway in its assault on the Second Amendment. Red flag laws are popping up and other matters are popping up in states across the country. And here to address these, we welcome back to Crosstalk Alan Gottlieb. He's founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. It's an organization dedicated to promoting a better understanding about our constitutional heritage to privately own and possess firearms. He's the author of numerous books, including Dancing in Blood, Exposing the Gun Lobby to Destroy Your Rights, Politically Correct Guns, the Gun Rights Factbook, and numerous others. Alan, welcome back to Crosstalk.
Always great to be with you. Thank you.
Before we look at the nation as a whole, I'd like to focus in on Virginia. There's a power shift, Alan, that took place in that state resulting from the 2019 November election. And if nothing bears out further than this, elections have consequences. The governor there, majority lawmakers, they have set their sights on a number of pieces of liberal legislation dealing with a matter of gun control. There was a massive rally in the state, but lawmakers are turning a deaf ear to the people. Tell us what's going on in Virginia.
Well, let me say the reason why the lawmakers are really turning a deaf ear is they've sort of been bought and paid for. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who basically funds the whole gun prohibition lobby in this country, spent several millions of dollars to get those people elected in Virginia. He's attempting to do a leveraged buyout of the Second Amendment and our gun rights. And unfortunately, in Virginia, he flipped control of the state legislature so that now the governor and the state legislature are trying to rush through as many anti-gun bills as they can. And they're going everything from banning modern sporting rifles, to banning magazines that hold over 12 rounds, to limiting your sales to one gun a month, to letting local cities and counties ban guns on public property. It just goes on and on, from red flag laws to without due process protections to all sorts of things going on, a registration scheme system. I mean, it's like everything at one time, and nothing is being held back.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting in all of this is this really seems to be in opposition to the people of the state. I mean, we look how so many places in Virginia are declaring themselves as sanctuary counties, you know, minus a few. But the people showed out in huge numbers there in a massive rally, and there's just no sway as far as the people are concerned, as if the people don't even exist.
Yeah, we now have in Virginia as the pushback. For almost every county has become a Second Amendment sanctuary county where they're refusing to enforce any of these new laws the legislature passes. And when you add the cities as well in Virginia that have joined as sanctuary cities against these anti-gun laws, it's now over 150 jurisdictions in the state of Virginia. Hmm. And quite honestly, it's not just unique to Virginia anymore, right? Because the sanctuary movement is spreading across the country. The majority of counties in the state of Illinois now are sanctuary counties supporting Second Amendment rights and won't enforce what they consider to be unconstitutional gun laws. And there are sanctuary cities that have popped up and counties that have popped up in places that are known to be anti-gun, like New Jersey and California. It's spreading all across the country because it's a pushback. I guess at this point, gun owners realize, and it's all being locally generated. I mean, this is where local grassroots people showing up at their city halls and at county council meetings to do this. It's no national organization even orchestrating this. It's just coming up from the bottom up. And people understand their rights are really, really under attack between mostly, again, funded by Michael Bloomberg, who spends millions of dollars every year on this. But this particular year, he's spending, you know, several hundred million dollars running anti-gun ads for his presidential campaign. His anti-gun groups have 400-plus staff people running around the state legislatures. His presidential campaign has, like, 1,200 employees now. And he's told them all that if he doesn't stick through the race through November, they're all guaranteed paychecks because they're going to be working for gun control instead. So we're seeing, you know, multi-hundreds of millions of dollars spent against gun rights, and we've never seen this before, and it's really hard to fight back.
Yeah. Well, you can't fight back financially, perhaps, and it really takes the grassroots citizens, as you've mentioned, coming up through their local city councils and county boards and state governments in this regard. Is this declaration of a Second Amendment sanctuary city or county, is this really an effective way of dealing with this issue?
I don't know for sure how effective it's going to be. It's definitely coming out of frustration by people who support the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's nothing that prohibits a county sheriff or, you know, city police chief from not enforcing a state law. They have to enforce their city laws and their county ordinances, but they don't have to enforce the state law. And so they all realize themselves that this is totally, you know, in violation of constitutional rights, and they're just refusing to do it.
Right.
So, somewhere push is going to come to shove. Virginia has said in Virginia's case that their county sheriffs don't have a right not to enforce it. However, a few years ago on some other legislation, the state argued that they did have the right not to enforce state laws. But when it comes to guns, they treat things differently.
Mm-hmm. If Virginia gets her way and they put all of this into play, is this going to address the mass violence problem in society?
No, let me talk about that for a second, because you shifted gears a little bit with that question. I love how the gun prohibition lobby in our country always tries to push, you know, if we only had, you know, universal background checks, we'd solve all these problems.
Mm-hmm.
They raise it every time there's a mass shooting in our country. If we had a universal background check, we would not have these mass shootings. Well, I love to point out this disconnect between their solution and the problem, because of all the mass shootings we've had in the last decade, only two of them were done with people who didn't go through a background check. And in those two cases, in Sandy Hook, elementary school in Connecticut, the shooter killed his mother and stole her gun and used it to commit the perpetrated the crime. And his mother, she did go through a background check. And then in a recent one in Texas, at the Walmart in Texas, we had a situation where the shooter bought an illegally manufactured gun, not through any, you know, normal legal chain. So there never would have been a background check anyway. When they scream to push, like, oh, we need this passed, we need that passed, you know, one gun a month law, you can't get by more than one gun a month, it needs to be registered. None of these things address the problem at all. It's just they would never have solved it or stopped the crime from happening. And it really disturbs me that it's so intellectually dishonest about it.
And circling back here on some of these things that are being put forth in Virginia and other locations, I'd like you to address this red flag matter. We see this popping up in a number of states. I understand a red flag gun seizure bill was just narrowly approved by the New Mexico Senate last week, a 22-20 vote, now going to the New Mexico House. Define, first of all, what is a red flag law? And some say this is a common sense proposal. I'd like to hear what you have to say on it.
Well, let me say, first of all, none of us want anybody having, you know, a deadly weapon or a firearm who's a danger to themselves or a danger to others. I mean, that's a given. And there's times in the needs when, you know, guns need to be removed from people and their premises. The problem with these red flag laws is there's no due process requirement in it. So all of a sudden, you don't even know somebody went to court to take your gun rights away. You're not even notified until they come to your door and seize your firearms. You had no way to go to court to say, hey, this is a false, bogus thing. It's a former spouse that hates me. It's an, you know, employee at work that's trying to do something to me. It's a disgruntled neighbor. You know, I've done nothing wrong. I'm not a threat at all. And we've had two incidents with this, one in Florida, where they even misidentified a person and they went and confiscated somebody's guns who wasn't even the person they were supposed to confiscate guns from. The police don't like knocking on these doors like this. And then we had one in Maryland where they knocked on the door, did not identify themselves, and the person inside the home picked up his gun. We don't know if it was to hand it to the police or to defend himself. He didn't even know they were police, and they shot and killed him. I mean, this is very dangerous the way these red flag laws are written. If they were written correctly, none of us would have a problem with it. But they're not written correctly, and they do not protect anybody's due process rights. And when due process rights get violated, especially in larger cities where you have, you know, police chiefs who are political servants or mayors who are anti-gun, where they just want to get everybody's gun, period, and they don't want anybody to own a gun, the abuse is run rampant with you. And that's what our concern is.
And speaking of abuse, I saw the story that came out of Fort Collins, Colorado, where a mom whose teenage son was shot and killed by a Colorado State University police officer, she is seeking now to have the officer's weapon seized under Colorado's red flag gun control law. And we understand, Alan, this is really going to be a critical test to...
Let me address that, because there's a movement on that. She lied and said that the police officer was actually the father of the kid, of her son, which was not true. And she went to court and with these affidavits without the police officer knowing it, got the red flag law implemented against them. They found out, of course, later on that she made this whole story up. And now she's being prosecuted for lying. But most of these laws in around the country that have been passed have no consequences for the person who lies.
And I understand. I mean, investigators even had described this case as suicide by cop at that particular time, too.
Yeah, I mean, the abuses are horrible, and the potential for extreme abuses are really there without these due process protections. When we've tried to put due process protections into these laws, the anti-gun movement in this country doesn't want it because they don't really care about that. All they want to do is take people's guns away.
Some have indicated that those who either currently have been or were at one time diagnosed as having PTSD, that they should forever be banned from owning a firearm. Agree or disagree?
Well, I disagree because a lot of people have gone through some things like that and are not perfectly fine now, or postpartum depression for a woman who gave birth. And then, you know, a year later, she's just perfectly normal again. You shouldn't lose your constitutional rights for the rest of your life because you've gone through some mental trauma, especially if you can prove you're not, you know, a danger to society. But what happens is, under federal law, if your rights are taken away from you because of, you know, so-called mental situation, there is no way to get them back ever in the law. You can't even apply to get your rights back or have them restored. And that's some of the problems people then face. But again, the anti-gun prohibition lobby in this country wants to disqualify as many people from firearms ownership as possible, and that's why they push these things written the way they're written. The devil is always in the details.
Yeah, when you look at the barrage of legislation that's going on in Virginia right now, is there anything to stop this momentum that's going on in that state?
Well, some of these bills are not going to pass. You know, there are some Democrats in some of the more rural areas that are worried now about, you know, being defeated in their elections, even though they tend to be not exactly that anti-gun themselves, but their party is being labeled as social gun prohibition party, that everybody's looking to, well, I can't vote for you because that means, you know, the Democrats who are anti-gun control the legislature, and I'm going to lose my rights. So some of these Democrats are starting to rebel a little bit, but unfortunately, their party controls them heavily, and on a lot of these measures, they're going to pass.
We're going to come back to more of these issues here on Crosstalk. Alan Gottlieb is our guest today, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. Their website is SAF.org, standing for Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how are stars formed?
Chris, evolutionists say that each star condensed out of interstellar clouds of gas. But think about it. How could this happen? Remember, space is a vacuum, and gas in a vacuum would be sucked out in all directions. How could this gas become so dense that it would collapse by its own gravity? The pressures pushing it out would far exceed the gravitational pressures inward. There have been a number of evolutionary suggestions to get the process started, but all of them start with stars in the beginning. They say that a nearby exploding star might send out a pulse of energy that would condense a cloud of gas, but the question is, where did the stars come from in the first place? Not how do stars in rare circumstances form other stars? The Bible says that God created stars on day 4 of creation week, and the evidence fits that back to Genesis truth.
This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for going back to Genesis.
Well, the Second Amendment's under attack, folks, and what we see taking place in Virginia, but wow, they're not alone there. It's happening in many other states, too. Alan Gottlieb is with us today, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, their website, saf.org. Alan, as we were leading up into that break there, we were talking about Virginia and what's going on there. At the very outset of the program, you said, hey, they had a major shift that happened in this November election. It really bears out that elections have consequences. And we're going to be talking about some of the presidential candidates coming up here in this segment as well. But, Alan, give us your thoughts on this, because there are some people say, well, there's not, you know, not a dime's worth of difference between candidates at times. But look what's happened in Virginia because people didn't get engaged and get involved.
Yeah, and that's what happened in Virginia and can happen other places. I'm concerned about the 2020 election cycle. You know, we at the Second Amendment Foundation, one of the things we're known for is our legal action, our lawsuits protecting gun rights in the courts. And of course, to be honest about it, 80% of the case law in the courts that support Second Amendment rights have been won by the foundation and our attorneys. So at SAF here, the judges are really important. Donald Trump has done an amazing job in getting pro-gun rights judges confirmed. We're coming up on close to 200 judges to the federal bench, about 25% of the electorate of the federal, you know, judiciary. He's appointed and got nominated and confirmed. If he could get a second term, and that's why the 2020 election cycle is so important, if he could get a second term and do that again in the second term, we would have definitely a majority of pro-gun rights judges on the federal benches all across the country. And for gun rights, that'd be very important because that's the ultimate check and balance on places like Virginia. So elections do have consequences, and it's really important for gun rights that this 2020 election cycle is really important. And, of course, Trump, even if he wins, can't get those judges confirmed if the Senate is in, you know, anti-gun control. And, you know, if it flips to the Democrats in November, he couldn't get them confirmed either. So controlling the Senate and the White House is so important right now to gun rights, it could be a milestone for generations to come.
Let's just review a little bit here. Now, here's this issue is front and center in so many statements that are being made right now by the presidential contenders as it relates to the November election. But here's one of the latest that came from former Vice President Joe Biden. Here's the clip.
No, and by the way, those who say the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots, a great line. Well, guess what? The fact is, if you're going to take on the government, you need an F-15 with Hellfire missiles. There's no way an AK-47 is going to take care of you if you're going to take on, you're worried about the government coming down, knocking down your door. And so it's bizarre. We never said you could own any weapon at all from the beginning. You can't own a machine gun. You can't own a bazooka. You can't own an M1 tank. No matter how much money you have, you can limit the kind of weapons that are able to be owned. And so I think, and by the way, I've all the work I've done on this, including in our administration, I now have over 58% of the NRA members acknowledging you can't own an assault weapon. There's no need for it. You can't have a magazine that has more than 10 rounds in it.
Okay, there's a whole lot, Alan, in that 53 seconds that he said. Go ahead with your comments.
Well, first of all, if you pull out of it, he said we never said you can own any kind of gun.
Right.
Okay, and then he goes back and talks about bazookas, you know, and things of that nature to try and dramatize it all. But he's also come out and said he's for legislation that only allows you to have three bullets in your gun. You know, if it was up to him, you wouldn't be able to own anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he tries to come across as being reasonable, but Joe Biden has never met an anti-gun bill that he hasn't wanted to go to bed with in his whole career. Mm. He's extremely anti-gun and tries to come across that, well, I'm only for certain things. And like talking about 58% of NRA members support him in banning assault weapons, that's totally untrue. That's, you know, Uncle Joe just made that up out of thin air. But this is what we have to deal with. And of course, in the case of the Democrats running for president, it was interesting that when Beto O'Rourke came out and said he was for banning guns, it sort of took the Democratic Party away from being for so-called reasonable gun control to being for absolute bans, yeah, you know, and prohibition. And a lot of Democratic candidates started talking that, oh, well, I'm just as anti-gun as Beto O'Rourke is. Then when they realized it wasn't playing so well in a lot of the, you know, marginal states, the battleground states that Democrats need to win, they stopped talking about guns.
Yeah.
Up until Michael Bloomberg declared his candidacy for president and started out running all his anti-gun ads for his presidential campaign, And now all the Democrats now have to be, quote-unquote, more anti-gun than Biden, try and get the left wing of their party to support them in the primaries. So now it's back front and center on the front burner for the gun control issue all over again.
Former Secretary of State John Kerry, he was in Iowa stumping for Joe Biden, and here's what he said, quote, "I'm a gun owner, been that all my life, but I got news for you. There's not a veteran here who would take an AR-16 with a long clip to go out and shoot a deer or shoot anything. This has no business. Joe led the fight to get those things off the street. Is there anything wrong with that statement there, Alan? This is not about deer hunting, is it?"
Well, first of all, he's got an AR-16, and there isn't an AR-16. There's an M-16, which is a fully automatic machine gun. AR-15s it's a 15, not a 16, and they're semi-automatic, and only fire one bullet for each pull of the trigger. It shows how ignorant the man is about firearms, and he's also, just like Joe Biden, has never met an anti-gun bill that he hasn't wanted to go to bed with. This is a guy whose voting record when he was a U.S. senator never supported gun rights. And this is what we're dealing with. So when they try to come about and say, "I'm a gun owner," he's not a gun owner. If he is, he's an elitist, and he also has probably armed protection since he's as wealthy as he is or lives in a gated community. And, you know, he feels safe, but he doesn't care about the rest of us.
Liz Warren, she said if elected, she would nuke the filibuster rule in the Senate in order to ram through gun control bills. And she's not alone in that.
No, she's not alone in that. And she also talked about how she'd use the gun control as a litmus test for her judge appointments to make sure that every judge that got elected, got confirmed and put on the federal bench would be in favor of gun bans. So there's another one. It's like each one's trying to, you know, outshoot the other one to be more anti-gun.
Yeah. Again, it boils down to people, you need to be informed what is being said, the statements that are being made, and understand elections have consequences. And who is propelled into the Democratic nomination and the Republican nomination will bear out here in the November election. And certainly the nation is going to have to live with the views and the matters that are put into place, the policies, the cabinet-level positions, the judges that are chosen, including likely another Supreme Court pick in the next term as well. All of these come into play, and this is no time, Alan, for people to be hitting the snooze button when it relates to elections.
Definitely not. You know, Ronald Reagan used to always say our elections, you know, our rights and our freedom are only one election away from extinction. When it comes to your Second Amendment rights, that is so true for the 2020 election cycle, not just for the presidential races, but the U.S. House, yeah, the Senate, your state house, your governors, even your local city councilmen. So be careful, too, when a candidate says, "I'm for the Second Amendment, but," when he puts the word "but" in there, you know you don't have a friend.
Yeah. And so often, friends, you have to have them define their terms. And when you talked to Ellen, spoke about the state government as well. I mean, we see what's going on in Virginia. There's issues going on in Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, California, Illinois. The list goes on. And when you take a look at some of these, I see, Alan, you're actually, Second Amendment Foundation recently sued the Illinois State Police. What's going on there?
Well, in Illinois, they have something called the Firearms Owner's ID Card. And without that ID card, you can't either own a gun, or likewise, if you want to get a concealed carry permit in Illinois, which you only now get because the Second Amendment Foundation sued and overturned their ban on concealed carry, you have to go through a background check. The state took $29.5 million out of the state police fund, which is used for the background checks for the FOID cards and the concealed carry permits, to take and use other places, so there's no money to do the background checks. Without the background checks, you don't get the permits. You either own a gun or carry a gun. We have people that have been waiting 13, 15, 16 months in Illinois to be able to get their permit. And we filed suit because basically you've effectively got a gun ban in place if you pass a law like that, that you have to have an ID card to have your gun, and then you don't give out the ID cards, it's an effective ban.
Also, I see you're involved in a case in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on so-called assault rifles.
Yeah, we're actually involved in two of them in the Ninth Circuit on bans of so-called assault rifles. In California, they banned assault rifles a long time ago. And then each year, they redefine what an assault rifle is so they can sweep more semi-automatic firearms under the banner of assault weapon and ban more guns. And under their new bans, we've re-challenged them, and we have a direct challenge in one, and somebody else filed a challenge that we filed an amicus brief in, a friend of the court brief, that we're trying to, you know, get those up the appeals ladder, eventually to the U.S. Supreme Court. So, yeah, those two more of our cases. We've currently got about 32 cases going on around the country in federal court right now. In fact, to be candid about it, we have three cases pending cert at the U.S. Supreme Court. Another one in Illinois that challenges the their whole FOID program to begin with. And then we have one coming out of Texas that challenges part of the 1968 Gun Control Act that says that you have to be a resident of the state you live in to buy a handgun, when in fact these days it's the same instant background check that's used nationally all across the country, so it shouldn't matter where you live if you're going through the same background check. We have another case at the U.S. Supreme Court, also out of California, where they have this thing called the handgun roster, and if the state doesn't put the handgun on the roster, you're not allowed to buy it. And they now amended that with a provision for a so-called microstamp provision, that a semi-automatic handgun has to be able to microstamp the bullet so that you know what gun it came out of, and it's written in a way that nobody can comply with it, so no manufacturer can make a gun that complies with the California law, and hence no new handgun can go onto the California roster list. But what happens is over time, guns fall off the list at about 10% a year. What California is effectively doing is over a 10-year cycle, they're going to basically ban all handguns in the state of California.
Alan, why are you so passionate about this issue?
Well, it started when I was in college, to be honest with you. I was very passionate about individual freedom and individual rights. And back then, you know, many years ago, the one area of the Bill of Rights that was always under attack was the Second Amendment. And unfortunately, it's still the area of the Bill of Rights that's constantly under attack. So I sort of generated to defending Second Amendment rights because I also believe the Second Amendment is the teeth in our Bill of Rights. The only way to make sure that Bill of Rights, that piece of paper stays there and can be, and is enforced, you know, if things really turn tyrannical in our country, is the Second Amendment, because that gives you the power to fight back.
You have you lead the Second Amendment Foundation. You're the founder of it, and you are seeking to keep people informed on matters. How can people get engaged through Second Amendment Foundation?
Well, let me give them a couple different ways to get engaged. One, the easiest way to get engaged to the foundation is at our website at saf.org. You can see all our legal cases and our educational materials that we put out and everything on the website. Membership is only $15 a year, but you can send in any dollar amount you want to join and be a contributor and supporter. And that's really important, and there's a lot of information on our website. But one website I'd like to send your listeners to is called keepandbeararms.com, which the foundation owns half of. And that particular website is an aggregated news link site that every day has, you know, 30, 40, 50 stories on it of things happening with firearms all across the country. If you really want to be educated on what is going on with your gun rights, that is the best place to go, and that's keepandbeararms.com.
Alan Gottlieb with us here today on Crosstalk and talking about Second Amendment-related issues. It is under attack. We're observing that in so many states across the nation right now. And we'd like to open phone lines to give you opportunity to call, ask a question. Maybe you disagree with something Alan said. You want to challenge him on it. Pick up your phone, give us a call. Maybe you've got a question on one of these issues that we've talked about, whether it be the red flag laws or the so-called gun show loophole, and on the list goes. Our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with your calls. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network. Our guest, Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. Back in a minute.
How is your marriage relationship? Do you have a spirit-filled marriage? Is your marriage one in which the lost world can look in and see Christ represented? Many of us know that we are called to have such a marriage, but fail to make it happen, perhaps due to lack of knowledge on the topic. In the booklet, What Does a Spirit-Filled Marriage Look Like?, biblical counselor Susan Heck draws principles from the book of Ephesians. She presents 13 doctrines that guide a marriage that will bring glory to God. You'll learn about humility, forgiveness, generosity, unity, and much more. You'll also learn not only to know these principles, but how to grow them in your marriage relationship. VCY is offering one copy of this booklet for a donation of $6, 5 copies for a donation of $24, or 10 copies for $42. Just call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, Alan Gottlieb from the Second Amendment Foundation. Just before we go to the phone lines, Alan, just want to ask you a couple things on international matters, one of which is Thailand. Many look at Thailand saying, you know, see how easy it is to get a gun in Thailand. Now we had this past weekend some 29 or so individuals killed, wounding many more, and say, see, this is what happens when you don't have effective gun control. What's your response?
Well, Thailand has much stricter gun control laws than the United States does, and in the case of what happened there, it was a military person who I believe used his military weapon to commit the crime. So again, all these laws and roadblocks to gun ownership don't stop these vicious crimes from happening.
One other issue, and that is suicide deaths. And we see the death by gun suicide having some significant numbers in our country. And other countries said, you know, if we find what the cause is, we put a stop to it. We'll stop certain things. Saying if guns were less plentiful, then we would the suicide rate would be dramatically cut. What's your position? Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I think if a person has mental health issues and is a danger to their own life, it's a good idea to make sure they don't have a firearm. And In fact, we work very heavily in the suicide prevention area. The Second Amendment Foundation and myself sit on in my home state of Washington, a Safer Homes Task Force created by the state legislature that works to educate gun owners on how to warning signs if somebody in your household is having a problem, to make sure a gun isn't, they don't have access to the firearm. We've done a whole lot for suicide prevention on a voluntary type basis with public education campaigns that's working very, very well without, banning people's guns or taking guns away per se. And a lot of state laws and places make it difficult for us to do that. I'll be honest, there are some states with these universal background checks that don't allow, let's say, me to go, a friend going through a mental health issue, to give me his gun to hold until he sorts things out. It'd be illegal without me being able to go to a licensed dealer, have him legally transfer the gun and pay a fee to me, and then reverse the process and pay a fee to give it back to him later on. A lot of state laws now, the ones that Michael Bloomberg has been pushing around the country, really aggravate the suicide situation in our country. It doesn't help people help other people who need help.
We're going to the phone lines. They're packed out. We're going to begin in Mansfield, Pennsylvania. Ron, you're on the air.
Hey, Jim, I want to thank you for this wonderful program. As a retired federal agent and a current firearms instructor of honest concealed carry people here in Pennsylvania, you guys, this program is unique. Very, very few stations would have such a positive Second Amendment program. I'm going to go online and make a substantial gift to Point of View, and I want to thank you. I know Alan Gottlieb. I've talked to him in the past, and he speaks for me.
Thank you, Ron. And by the way, this program is called Crosstalk at crosstalkamerica.com.
And, Ron, I just want to thank you for your kind words. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Terry is calling now from Milwaukee. Terry, you're on the air.
Where can I go to find unequivocally what the founders meant? Well-regulated militia, what it meant to them, and how it applied to people who were not in the Army, Air Force, Marines. And how do I know that this is not my personal interpretation or yours? I want to know what they really meant by those words and how it would apply to anybody.
Alan?
Sure. I'll answer it briefly for you, but there's lots of things have been written about it, and research has been done. And in fact, if you just get the Supreme Court decisions in the case, the Heller case and the McDonnell cases, where twice the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on this issue, saying it's an individual right, the footnotes in there, as well as the dictum that the judges wrote, will give you the whole roadmap to your answer. But on a short basis, let me start out with well-regulated militia. Unwell-regulated, in Webster's Dictionary, particularly in the early versions of it back then, regulated also had a meaning of trained, and it still does today if you go to the dictionary. Well-regulated means trained. And what they meant that they wanted people to be trained with their firearms. And in fact, in Virginia, which now has come full circle here, they used to have a law way back when that when you went to church on Sunday morning, you had to bring your musket or your rifle with you for quote-unquote militia practice afterwards to make sure that you're proficient with your firearm and knew how to use it. And could use it effectively. And when they talked about militia, the definition of militia back then in the debates, the founding fathers used its terminology, the militia, who is the militia, was a question they asked. It's all of us. It's the people as a whole. And as recently as 1970, the United States Congress updated the Uniform Militia Act. And in the Uniform Militia Act, there's two classes of militia. One is the National Guard, but the second class is everybody else who's not a member of the National Guard, is the unorganized militia. And they, in 1970, they amended it so it didn't just wasn't just men over the age of 18. It also included women.
So looking at those two Supreme Court cases, and I'm confident they're likely online somewhere, Alan.
Oh, yeah. If you just Google the U.S. Supreme Court Heller decision or U.S. Supreme Court McDonald decision, someplace it'll pop up where you can actually read the decision.
Great.
And the opinion is written.
Thank you, Terry. Matthew is calling next. Eau Claire, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you guys for taking my phone call. I totally agree with you guys about elections have consequences. My question is for your guest on when Donald Trump passed the bump stock confiscation, that's the first time I ever remember in history where an actual gun part was banned and confiscated by a president. So I want to know if their organization actually tried to keep that from happening, because I know Gun Owners of America filed a lawsuit against the administration and the Attorney General, the ATF on that.
Alan?
Yeah, we tried to discourage the administration from going in that direction because the bump stock, just being an accessory to a firearm, was stupid to ban, and it's only been one time in our history where one's ever been misused. We did not file suit in court because we knew it was a loser suit. There's no way based on precedent that was going to win. And as a result, the court case did not win. We try to spend our money on in legally where we think we can really win cases and not just waste our donors' money. But quite frankly, the bump stock ban was absolutely stupid. Has it saved any lives? The answer is no.
Hmm. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Andrew in Chattanooga, Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. This is Andrew. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with your guest. He brought up a lot of prudent points. I just wanted to ask, with the red flag laws especially, can you see more people rebelling against local authorities and against law enforcement and having them come unannounced to their properties and asking for their firearms? And do you just see this getting out of hand in the future, like people rebelling and actually protesting and getting violent?
Well, I hope not. I'm not a fan of violence in solving our problems at all. But, that people are being very frustrated with this. Law enforcement themselves don't like enforcing these laws because it puts law enforcement officers in jeopardy when they knock on people's doors like this, when people don't even know why they're there or and you're coming in, turn over your guns and, I didn't do anything wrong. Why are you taking my guns away? So it's a problem that's really breeding disrespect for law enforcement in general. Law enforcement doesn't like it because they don't want to see that happen either. The 13 states that have these so-called red flag laws, none of them have the proper due process protections involved in them. We've been working with the White House to try and do something federally to force these states to give due process laws in order to get federal law enforcement funding from the federal government. And if there isn't due process in these laws, it's going to cost the states money. We're trying to everything we can to fix these. There's been a lot of abuses. One of the things is, in all honesty, is very few people ever get attacked with these red flag laws. So the problem we're having is finding plaintiffs to go to court to try to challenge it. And challenging it up front to start with, I'll be honest, it's going to be as an applied challenge. It's how the law is applied to me as an individual. Once you get several number of people that whose rights were violated, then you can go back to court and say, hey, on its face, the law is unconstitutional. It's a facial challenge. There's going to be a long process to get these 13 states to rescind or get these laws off the books in the interim. But we're working on it.
Thank you, Andrew. Good question. Let's go to Steve in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air.
When I heard Joe Biden talk, now, correct me if I'm wrong, he said you can't own a machine gun, but you can. It's very expensive, a lot of background checks, but you can get a full auto lower. It just has to be doubly registered, fingerprinted. I think I'm right on that, aren't I?
You're right on that on a federal level. Some states don't allow you to do that. My home state of Washington doesn't. It's interesting, like in California where they've banned semi-automatic so-called assault weapons, you can own a fully automatic one if you've gone through the federal process. And in the state of Virginia, where this all this is happening right now, yes, you can own a fully automatic weapon if you've got an NFA weapon. if your gun paid the $200 excise tax, been fingerprinted and gone through, you know, the background check. And they're expensive, but yes, you can. So again, Biden never knows what he's talking about. He always talks out of two sides of his mouth at the same time.
Yeah.
With Joe Biden, I mean, the Democrat politicians, the only thing they shoot is themselves in the foot.
Hmm.
I mean, their ignorance is amazing. And, you know, one other thing, you know, you're always talking about gun control laws. Well, you know what? I haven't seen a gun get up off the table, even fully loaded, and assault anyone or shoot anyone. If that's the problem, we need to arrest the guns. But, oh, wait. The people are problems, but not the guns.
Hmm.
Well, let me tell you a funny story. When Janet Reno was, before she was Attorney General in the Clinton administration, she was Dade County prosecutor in Miami, Florida. She actually had a grand jury indict a handgun for murder. Just because she hated guns so much, she indicted a gun for murder and held a trial against the gun.
Oh, my. Thank you, Steve.
Sometimes they do that.
Steve, thank you for the call. Doug is next in Letcher, South Dakota. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for my call. I'd like to point out a cartoon that I had seen one time that said that I did not pass my English class because it was my pencil's fault.
Mm, yeah.
Also, I had my wife's nephew had a head-on collision with a semi. This guy tried to just kill himself, and he did it without a gun. And he was busted up real bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's many different ways. And also, what is it that Bloomberg can benefit by taking everybody's guns away?
Thank you, Doug.
That's a hard question for me to answer. He's so vehemently anti-gun rights, it's unbelievably amazing. I don't know what he benefits by it, unless the guy wants to be a total dictator and tell us how to run and live our lives in every area, you know, of our living. Which in some cases he does. I mean, outside of areas of guns, he's very dogmatic about, you know, sugar. You shouldn't be able to buy a sugar drink, a Coca-Cola. He's very dogmatic about lots of things he stands for, and he's, you know, he's an elitist. But again, while he wants to take your gun away, he has armed bodyguards protecting him.
Yeah. Think about that, folks. Doug, thank you for the call. Next is Mike in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to warn Crosstalk listeners about our red flag law, in quotes, here in Arizona, which is supposed to be the most gun-friendly state. Our governor has been pushing for a red flag law, but our legislature has been fighting him. But he didn't have to go for a red flag law because our Supreme Court made up its own red flag law years ago by a rule of procedure. We tried to fight it. There's really nothing you can do to fight your own justices. So, again, I just want to warn listeners that if they hear we don't have red flag laws in Arizona, in fact, we do.
Hmm. Your comment on that, Alan?
Yeah, well, actually, the call is right about talking about the courts have ruled in Arizona. Governor Ducey's red flag law version, I don't support it because it still doesn't have enough due process protections to it to make me happy, at least has the provision in it that if somebody makes a false statement against somebody else to try and get a red flag against them, that they can be prosecuted. So out of all the states that have them, that would be the better law of the third of the states that currently have them, but it still isn't good enough.
Yeah, thank you. Mike, we're up against a break, and we'll be back with more of your phone calls. Alan Gottlieb is our guest here today on Crosstalk. Our number is 800-733-9829. Back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. We continue our series now on the dangers of discourse or dialogue with the cultural Marxist. As we've been saying, there's nothing wrong with having a debate, but when you have a discourse or dialogue, you're trying to merge your worldview with theirs and find common ground. You can't do that. And when you do that, involved in discourse or dialogue with them, you fall into trap and danger number 8 in our list. You have allowed your cultural Marxist enemy to define the language. You're giving validity to their language, like woke, white privilege, social justice. You're allowing them to control the narrative. You're setting up the conflict. You're walking into a trap, and you're setting yourself up to be marginalized and your values marginalized. And ultimately, what you're doing is you're giving legitimacy to their values. You're saying, I'll talk with you and try to find common ground because there is some value to what you believe. And guess what? You have surrendered to the psychological process and submitted yourself to all 8 dangers. For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House.
Alan Gottlieb with us here today on Crosstalk. Again, the website, SAF.org, standing for Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org. And the website also that he gave was keepandbeararms.com. Lines are, we've got several callers here. Let's go back to Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. We have Maxine who is calling, and Maxine, you're on the air.
I had two comments or questions. First of all, should we support the NRA? And secondly, what can we say to our good-hearted neighbors who only hear the liberal side of gun control? What's just a simple argument we could use to help them to see the other side?
Thank you for the call.
Okay. I know the NRA is going through a lot of internal problems right now, both financially and management-wise. My answer is support every gun group there is. We can't afford not to have a strong NRA, and we cannot afford not to have other groups as well. So I'd say support them, but don't put all your eggs in one basket. Support everybody. With regard to how you convince your neighbors, one of the things that I've used, which is always kind of fun, is, you know, you may not want to own a gun. You don't own a gun. But the fact that I do and I have one means the burglar who's committing his crimes in our neighborhood doesn't know which one of us is armed. And it might keep you protected just because I have a gun and he doesn't know who does and who doesn't.
Hmm. Thank you, Maxine. Brad in West Dallas, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. The lies of the anti-gun crowd go way back. I remember when they said, oh, we don't want your guns. We just want the Saturday night specials. There's really no use for them. They're inaccurate and all that. Then they wanted the dangerous, defective, cheap guns because they were dangerous and defective. Then they wanted the assault rifles and along with the redefinition thereof. And then they have got their little deception going on the whole time, trying to make people think that semi-automatic equals machine gun, and it's not. Fully automatic equals machine gun. With these red flag laws, given the fact that they've been lying the whole time, remember, if they ever get their way and they confiscate all the guns, it won't stop there. They'll just confiscate a lot of other things, like, oh, your kids, your wife, your money, your property, and your life.
Yeah, it's called control.
Yep.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you. And this
is something you've talked about, Alan, as well, as this whole aspect of control, whether it be the Michael Bloombergs out there or whomever.
Yeah, you know, I look at people who want to take guns away. It's just being anti-freedom. They don't want you to have the freedom to have a gun. They probably don't want you to have freedom in other areas as well. And the caller brought up the point, you know, the anti-gunners, you know, they label things Saturday night specials, assault rifles. Well, the truth is they want to label every gun and every rifle and assault rifle and ban it, and every handgun a Saturday night special and ban it too, so there's nothing left in the middle.
We have Delbert calling from Lyonsville, Pennsylvania. Delbert, you're on the air.
Okay. What I'm calling about, how come Bloomberg can let a baby be killed out of the womb and be born and killed, and he wants to take away the guns?
Mm-hmm.
I think they ought to do something about this abortion issue. Bloomberg is a real nutcase. He's a man that's got too much money.
Well, thank you, Delbert. He's a man that's spending a whole lot of money. I know in our state and our markets here, Alan, for instance, we are seeing just loads and loads of commercials that he's putting out for the presidential his presidential bid.
Well, I don't think he'll win the presidency.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's now somewhere spent something like $300 million on TV and radio ads across the country, many of which have been anti-gun. And, of course, his anti-gun groups similarly is probably spending somewhere like $60 million on anti-gun ads as well. This has an impact on public opinion. When you only hear one side of the issue, you get brainwashed after a while.
Thank you for the call here today. We've run out of time for additional calls here today on Crosstalk. Want to just discuss further here with our guest, the person who called in and just frustrated with their neighbors in this regard and just the mentality that's going on. Alan, this is where they need to really brighten or open up their horizons to even what they're being fed by news media, mainstream media, versus, you know, programs like this or visiting websites like SAF.org and keepandbeararms.com, where they can really become informed on these issues and not just, you know, whatever the 6 o'clock news is going to put on the air for them.
Yeah, I agree. I hate the term called mainstream media because they're really not mainstream at all.
No.
They're trying to take people's rights away and share the Constitution. They're pretty extreme. So I like Jones to label them outright as the, you know, leftist liberal media, because I think we're the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. We're here supporting American fundamental values and rights. We're mainstream. They're not.
Alan, are you optimistic toward the future on this issue?
Well, this issue, it's going to be a fight forever. The other side is not going away, but I plan on winning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to lose my rights. I'm here to keep those rights.
Yeah.
I view it this way. We all need to be Second Amendment first responders when our rights are under attack.
I'd like to just also point out a couple issues going on right now. I see Tennessee, we've got listeners in Tennessee today, may be able to carry conceal on college campuses if a bill their legislature passes. This is a movement that's happening across the nation as well, as far as carry conceal on college campuses.
Yeah, you know, in the so-called red states where Republicans are in control and charge, we're gaining gun rights. It's the blue states that are our problems. And the extreme blue states like New York and California, New Jersey, are where the biggest problems are.
Also, little was said on this in national media, but Kentucky also had some pro-gun rallies take place recently, too.
Yes, they have. And I love in West Virginia, they've now said that all the neighboring Virginia counties have become Second Amendment sanctuaries, are welcome to leave Virginia and become part of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Alan, what thought do you want to leave with our listeners as it relates to this issue?
Well, I guess it's important for all of us to be Second Amendment first responders. I mean, the Bill of Rights is a piece of paper. Without us, without our blood, sweat, and tears, it's very easy for people to shred that document. So we need to stay active and engaged. And again, I urge all your listeners to go to saf.org and help.
SAF.org. And the other site that you promoted, that's dealing more with the news stories and issues going on?
Yeah, it's a news aggregator site about guns and gun rights at keepingbeararms.com. It's very entertaining because everything going on across the country that involves guns is on there every day on a daily basis.
Yeah, so if you want to stay informed on this particular issue, Second Amendment-related issues, again, it's keepandbeararms.com. Well, Alan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Always my pleasure. You have great callers. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Alan Gottlieb, our guest here today on Crosstalk. And folks, I would like to refer you also to a recent program that we did with an area pastor on the biblical case for self-defense. And you'll find interesting information on our website at crosstalkamerica.com. Our time is gone. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
Been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.